to the book of Proverbs, chapter 31. This will be the last lesson in the book of Proverbs. We see that these are King Lemuel remembering the words of his mother. We see the bulk of Proverbs, of course, is the wise instruction from a father to his son, and the book closes with wise instruction from a mother to her son. We saw last week that she warns him concerning things that will lead to his destruction. And then beginning in verse 10, of course, very familiar verses, she begins to speak to him concerning a particular kind of woman or character of a particular woman who she refers to as a virtuous woman. Again, we see from verse 1 that this is the prophecy that his mother taught him. In other words, it's divine instruction. This is instruction from God. These are principles of God. And as you read through verses 10 through 31, we're not going to read them right now, but as you read through those verses, you see that this woman that is portrayed, again, she's referred to as a virtuous woman. And contrary to popular belief, the Bible does not present women as second-class citizens. In fact, the Bible exalts women. She is referred to as the weaker vessel in 1 Peter 3 and verse 6. And as the weaker vessel, their husbands are to dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife. Giving honor unto the wife as the weaker vessel. So we see that she is to be respected. She is to be esteemed. She is to be admired. She is to be adored. She is to be recognized, regarded. She is to be shown great devotion. We see that Christ, of course, when he speaks of his church, has chosen to use the symbol of a woman to represent his church. This is made plain especially in Ephesians chapter 5. And we see that husbands are to love their wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. And as you read through Ephesians chapter 5 there, beginning with verse 25, you see that she is to be loved with a peculiar love, again, as Christ loved his church. She is to be loved with a sacrificial love as Christ gave himself for the church. This is a love that shows much care. Again, it's a love that is purifying. It's never defiling, but always a purifying love. It's an edifying love. It's the same love that Christ has for his church. It's a protective and providing love. And, of course, it is an unbreakable love. So the woman is in a place of honor. She is in a place of esteem. And when women try to usurp God's ordained place for them, they bring degradation upon themselves. And one of the most devastating, debilitating, and destructive movements of the day, of course, is the feminist movement. And radical feminism has brainwashed modern culture and has, again, brought much degradation upon women and upon their God-given position of honor. And I believe that feminism is designed, and it is meant, and it is the intent to destroy God's design. So women today are being bombarded with the idea that being a wife, being a mother, is a bondage, that it is an imprisonment, that somehow it is an infringement upon their independence, upon their freedom, upon their liberty. And one of the least respected roles in society today is that of a wife and a mother in home raising her children. And I do believe that's where a wife and a mother should be, in home raising her children. And God's standards, we're not going to get into that tonight, but God's standards have not changed. But it is amazing. It's how that through the years, society's perception of women has drastically changed. And it's not good. The society's perception of the woman's role has drastically changed. If you rummage through some old magazines, and they don't have to be that old, back 30, 40 years, and you look at women as they are portrayed in those magazines, you look at the ads that are in those magazines, and you see mothers in dresses rocking babies. You see mothers in kitchens cooking dinners for family. You may see a woman sitting on a bed reading stories to her children. And pictures like that today sound almost like fiction. They're unheard of today. And you look at today's magazines, and you look at the advertisements in today's magazines, and now you see women dressed up in a business suit, carrying a briefcase as she rushes down a crowded street. Quite a change. Quite a change in the perception. Society's perception of a modern woman is that she, of course, works outside of the home. And people will argue till they're blue in the face that that is necessary today. I beg to differ. She's building a career, refusing to be in any sort of submission to her husband, exercising her independence, relying on her own resources, not wanting her husband or children to interfere with her personal goals. She may have her own bank account, and she puts the children in the care of strangers, and that's the kind of woman that the world applauds today. That is the perception of women today. And that's why Proverbs 31, verses 10 through 31, is very offensive to most people today. However, it should not be offensive to anyone who is a member of one of the Lord's churches. If these things offend you, you're in bad shape. You're in terrible shape. You have been duped by the world's way of thinking. And it's so important that we do not allow Hollywood, that we do not allow the leftist media or the prophets of political correctness and the enemies of Christ and the enemies of the Bible redefine biblical values. And that's what they're bent on doing. And this is why so many have such a problem today with Proverbs 31. Now, the woman that is described here is rare. She's rare. That is indicated by the question in verse 10, who can find a virtuous woman. In other words, the woman that is described here is not the norm. But I believe she should be the norm amongst God's people. She should be the norm in the Lord's churches. This woman also, we see she's invaluable, as indicated by the phrase, "For her price is far above rubies." Her value to a nation, her value to a society. And may I say, a woman is more of value to a nation who raises her children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord than seeking a career. So she's of great value to a nation. She's of great value to a society. She's of great value to her husband. She is of great value to her children. She is of great value to her home. She is of great value to her church. It is a value that cannot be calculated. It is a value that cannot be surpassed. Her price is far above rubies. And then we see beginning with verse 10 or verse 11, we see this woman is described. Well, really, she's described in verse 10. She's described as virtuous. She's virtuous. That is, she's righteous. She's pure. She's upright. She's irreproachable. She's honorable. She's reputable. She is a woman of principles. She is a woman of conviction. She is a woman of moral excellence. She is a woman that has tremendous inner strength. And again, she has great conviction. She, as you read through Proverbs 31, you see that this woman is a woman of efficiency. And Ruth is referred to in Ruth chapter 3 and verse 11 as a virtuous woman. Proverbs 12 and verse 4, we read, a virtuous woman is a crown or an honor to her husband. She is a crown or an honor to her husband. And as such, she should be respected. As such, she should be appreciated. As such, she should be loved. And the virtuous woman that is portrayed here in Proverbs 31 is the opposite of the evil woman that we read of in Proverbs 6 in verse 24. She's the opposite of the clamorous woman that we read of in Proverbs 9 and verse 13. That is, the loud, the noisy, the demanding individual. This woman is the complete opposite. She's the opposite of the brawling woman that we read of in Proverbs 21 and verse 9. She is the opposite of the contentious and angry woman that we read of in Proverbs 21 and verse 9. She is a woman of virtue. She is righteous. She has godly character. Now you'll notice in verse 11, she is described as trustworthy. We see the heart of her husband doth safely trust in her. That is, it is not a misplaced trust. The husband trusts this woman. And this is not a misplaced trust. He safely trusts in her so that he shall have no need of spoil. Because of her character, because of her behavior, he is able to have complete trust in her. He is able to have complete confidence in her. She can be trusted. She can be depended upon to be discreet. She can be trusted and depended upon to maintain a well-disciplined life in all areas, in all phases of her life. She is not going to bring shame. She is not going to bring reproach upon her husband. In the way she talks, she's not going to bring shame to her husband. In the places she goes, she is not going to bring shame or reproach to her husband. To the clothes she wears, she's not going to bring shame, and she's not going to bring reproach unto her husband. Because of what she brings to his life, the latter part of the verse says he has no reason. He has no reason to leave his home for enrichment. He has no reason to look anywhere else She is a solid rock, and therefore she is trustworthy. She can be trusted financially. She can be trusted with the children. She is trustworthy in all aspects of her life. She is also described as an asset to her husband. Verse 12, she will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She will do him, that is her husband, good. That is, she is interested in being a benefit and a blessing to him. She adds honor to his name. She adds honor to his reputation. Her commitment is seen in the words, all the days of her life. All the days of her life, she desires to be a blessing to her husband. She desires to bring honor to his name. She has a positive influence upon her husband. She has a positive influence upon her husband. She does not have a negative influence. She has a positive influence. Again, a virtuous woman is the crown of her husband. She contributes to the well-being of her husband. Unlike many women that are portrayed in the Bible, who certainly were not an honor to their husband. You can go to Jezebel and Solomon's wives and Michael, who despised David in her heart. But this virtuous woman, she desires to do good to her husband. We see also throughout this 31st proverb, she is described as a devoted homemaker. And this is what offends so many today. She considers homemaking a high and noble call. In fact, her home is a priority. And she finds great joy in making a home. She finds great joy in homemaking. Yet today, so many will say, well, it's so unfulfilling. Something's wrong with you. Something is wrong with you. Something is wrong with your thinking. Here is a woman who finds joy in homemaking. She's a willing worker. She's filled with energy. She's filled with enthusiasm. Again, toward her home. Verse 13, she seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. Notice verse 18 and verse 19, she perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. Verse 21, she is not afraid of the snow for her household. For her household. For all her household are clothed with scarlet. Verse 24, she maketh fine linen and selleth it, and delivereth girdles unto the merchant. She's always considering the ways of her household. Notice verse 27, she looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. So she's a willing worker to make her home a home. She's filled with energy. She's filled with enthusiasm. She does not lack motivation. She makes provision for her home. In verse 13, she's like the merchant ship. She bringeth her food from afar. We see also that she is a woman of discipline, and she has good time management skills. She does not fail to plan. She does not procrastinate. In verse 15, she riseth also while it is yet night and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maiden. She has a vision. She has a vision for her family, and she makes very careful and she makes wise decisions. And again, this is why she can be trusted. Verse 16, she considereth the field and buyeth it. And the husband trusts her to do that. And the fruit of her hands, she planteth a vineyard. She has inner strength again. Verse 17, she girdeth her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms. She's also a woman of commitment. She has insight. She has awareness. We see in verse 18, she perceiveth. That is, she carefully considers things. We see also she displays great preparation and care. In verse 21, she's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She takes great care concerning the appearance of her house. And she does everything she can to make that house enjoyable and comfortable. We see she maketh herself coverings of tapestry there in verse 22. Her husband is a man of influence. We see that in verse 23. And she's content. She's content with that. She is content to work behind the scenes. And she does so without any resentment whatsoever. No resentment. Though her husband is well known, she has no resentment toward him. Because she considers homemaking to be her call. And all for more women today. I wonder how many young women, it's very few, who consider that to be a goal, to be a homemaker, to be a faithful wife, to be a homemaker. And the older women are to teach the younger. And what's sad today is the older women are teaching the younger. Teaching them to go out and work. They're teaching them to be independent. We need virtuous women, just like we need Proverbs 31 men also. We need Proverbs 31 women. We see also that as you sum up Proverbs 31 concerning her being a devoted homemaker, as you read through here, you see she's a manager. She's a manager. A husband who insists on being an authoritative dictator, it's because he doesn't trust his wife. Because he doesn't love her like he ought to. There's no need for that. If she's what she should be, you can trust her. And she can manage things, and she's a mentor, and she's a mentor, and she's an organizer, and she's an encourager, and she's an inspiration, she's a motivation, she's a helper, she's an example, she's an edifier to all who are in her house, and it's all done in love. She does it because she wants to. She does it because, again, she considers this her call. And she does not consider herself a prisoner in her own house, because she knows this is what God has for her. We see also that she is described as a woman of compassion in verse 20. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. She has devotion, she has concern for her own home, but it's not limited to that. She also has compassion, she has sympathy, she has empathy, she has sensitivity and warmth and love toward others as well. And then notice in verse 22, the latter part of that verse, her clothing is silk and purple. She takes care of her appearance. And at all times, she's careful. At all times, she's careful how she presents herself. Because first and foremost, she represents God. But she also, she seeks to do her husband good all the days of his life. She is also a representative of her husband. And she dresses well. And she dresses in a manner that will respect, that will bring respect unto her husband. She lives, she works, she dresses, and carries herself in modesty and decency. She is a virtuous woman. She is a great tribute to her husband in her appearance and in her dress. And many today will say it doesn't matter what I wear. God looks upon the heart. Half of that statement is true. God does look upon the heart, but it does matter what you wear. Because the truth is, clothing many times reveals the condition of the heart. When Adam and Eve sinned, what did they do? They sewed fig leaves together in an attempt to cover their nakedness. We read in Genesis 3 and verse 7. But those fig leaves prompted the question, "Hast thou eaten of the tree whereof I have commanded thee that thou shouldst not eat?" You see, their clothing revealed that they had done wrong. Their clothing revealed that they had rebelled against God. Clothing can still reveal the same today. For all those who say, well, it doesn't matter what clothing a person wears, don't you understand that clothing can reveal a heart? That clothing can definitely reveal rebellion against God. When a person parades around half naked, that is a rebellious heart. That is a heart of rebellion, and their clothes reveal that they have a heart of rebellion. In like manner today, many reveal by God, reveal by their clothing that they are sinners, that they are rebels against God. Just like in Genesis 3 and verse 21, when God clothed them with coats of skins, the clothing revealed something. What did it reveal? It revealed that they were forgiven by God. The fig leaves revealed that they had rebelled against God. But the clothing that God covered them with revealed that they had been forgiven. And everyone, man or woman, should want to dress in such a way that says, "I love the Lord." That should be the message that we send in our dress. I love the Lord. And whether you realize it or not, everyone does send a message with the clothing they wear. You send a message. Many times you send a message on whose side you are on. But this virtuous woman, she's concerned with her appearance. And she's very careful about her appearance. I don't understand any man. You've got to be totally out of your mind to encourage your wife or to encourage your daughter to parade around naked. You got to be out of your mind. Your thinking is warped. There's nothing godly about that. And the Proverbs 31 man encourages his wife, encourages his daughter to dress in a way that says, "I love the Lord," to dress in a way that says, "I respect the authority of God." And yet today, many dress in a way that says just the opposite. "I don't care what the Lord thinks. And I reject the authority of God, and I don't care what my husband thinks. This is the way that I'm going to dress." So every one of us needs to ask the question, what am I saying by what I'm wearing. Because you do say something. You do send a message. Proverbs chapter 7 and verse 10, we read of the attire of a harlot. She was known by her attire. Her clothing sent a message. But this virtuous woman, she is a woman who is very careful about her appearance. She is concerned about her appearance. She is also described as a woman of godly character. Verse 25, strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. Strength and honor are her clothing. That is, she adorns herself with strength. She has courage. She has stamina. She adorns herself with honor. That is, she's a person of dignity. She's a person of morality. She's a person of principles. A person of righteousness. A person of goodness. These things are her clothing. She's adorned in these things. These things can be clearly seen. If you see her, you can clearly see that she's a woman of dignity, that she has morality, that she has principles. We see in the book of 2 and John that the church is referred to as an elect lady. A lady. Not just a woman, but a lady. That is, a person of dignity, person of morality. We see also she is described as a woman of wise speech. Verse 26, she openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She openeth her mouth with wisdom. The very wording suggests that her mouth is not always open. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 4 says that she is of a meek and quiet spirit. That is, she's not a compulsive talker. But when she has something to say, she opens her mouth with wisdom. When she has something to say, she's wise in her speech. Not only does this woman let wisdom guide her speech, but notice in her tongue is the law of kindness. That is, what she says in a gentle spirit, a gentle manner. She said, what she says comes from a benevolent heart, revealing a kindly disposition. She does not seek to be hurtful or destructive in her words. But when she opens her mouth, there's wisdom. There's wisdom. She's a woman who would be wise to listen to. Because when she speaks wisdom. Lastly, she's described as a woman of reverence. Verse 30, favor is deceitful. Beauty is vain. And oh, how many need to learn that lesson. But a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. A woman that feareth the Lord. That is the pinnacle of virtue. She fears the Lord. What that means is she loves the Lord. She's a woman who is committed to the Lord. Her priority is the Lord. She's a woman of prayer. She's a woman of faith. A woman of devotion to God. A woman of praise. A woman of thanksgiving. Woman of grace. She's a woman of purity. And she is a woman of worship. She fears the Lord. That is, she has a relationship with God. She has peace with God. And having this relationship with God, she is committed to God's order. And she has a servant's heart, first and foremost, for the Lord. This woman that is portrayed here in Proverbs 31, she doesn't change because of a new trend. She doesn't change because it's popular to do so. She sticks with the old ways. She is a woman of virtue. She is a woman that can, again, be trusted. She's summarized in a few places in the New Testament. Notice in 1 Timothy chapter 2. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 9 and 10. In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel. That's what the virtuous woman does, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broidered hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness. She professes godliness and she has good works. This is the virtuous woman. Book of Titus chapter 2. Book of Titus chapter 2 verse 3, that the aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness. That's the virtuous woman. Not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, or how to love their husbands and how to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. And then in 1 Peter chapter 3, 1 Peter chapter 3, we see here a woman who is married to an unsaved husband. He is described in verse 1 as not obeying the word. You can make that an unsaved husband. You can make it a backslidden husband. What's she to do? They also may without the word be won by the conversation, the conduct of the wives, while they behold, that is, the husband who obeys not the word, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear or reverence. You do what you're supposed to do. If you're married to an unsaved man or married to a backslidden individual that no longer wants to serve God, you just keep living like you're supposed to live. While they behold your chaste conversation, whose adorning let it not be the outward adorning of the plaiting of the hair and of the wearing of gold or of putting on apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart and that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. A meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God, a great price. So again, you have the bulk of Proverbs, the wise instruction, the wise counsel, wise rebukes and warnings of a father to his son. And then the book closes with the wise instruction, counsel, and warnings of a mother to her son. And blessed is the individual who has spiritually wise parents, who has a spiritually wise father, and who has a spiritually wise mother. You're blessed of God. That is rare today. That is very, very rare. It's getting more and more rare all the time. Children that are raised by parents that are spiritually wise. But may I say that such a blessing also brings an awesome responsibility upon the child. Makes you accountable. Again, if you've been raised in a godly home, you ought to thank God every single day of your life. If you have a godly wife, you have a godly wife, you ought to realize what you have. You do not mistreat her in any way, but you esteem her, and you realize the value of what you have. And if you have a godly husband, it's the same thing. Again, Proverbs 31 woman, she's rare. And Proverbs 31 man, he's rare also. But that's what we need to be. We need women in our churches that are virtuous. We need men in our churches that are what they ought to be. Because again, our churches can only be as strong as our homes. If our homes are falling apart, the church is falling apart. If marriages are falling apart, the church is falling apart. You can go through all the motions and you can do that for years. You can do that till the Lord comes. But it doesn't make it right. Doesn't make it right. So God help us. Again, throughout the book of Proverbs, wisdom, heavenly wisdom, applied to every aspect of our lives, that we would seek the wisdom that is from above, that we would truly be a wise people, that we would live in conformity to the Lord. We need heavenly wisdom. And if we lack heavenly wisdom, let us ask. And God gives that wisdom. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in a verse of song. Let's also